Hi, this is Joe Francicchia, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Media. We are going to be talking today about Navtech's Mapping and Positioning Engine, or MPE. The MPE is a subset of the Navtech database that is coupled with a microprocessor assembly, including a GPS chipset, that was designed to support a variety of applications that assist the driver of a car or other vehicle to, for example, help in reducing gas consumption. The MPE specification, according to Navtech, outlines the optimal deployment of the GPS chipset, microprocessor, memory, and all required software, including map matching. It also provides guidelines for advanced driver assistance systems, or ADAS, A-D-A-S. Its interface specifications, and the controller area network, the CAN bus interface, which you will hear more about in this podcast. The Map and Positioning Engine also provides specifications for Navtech's patented electronic horizon algorithms, which are essential to predictive road information for ADAS that searches for and interprets attributes on the road ahead. We will be talking today with Bob DeNiro, Vice President for Navtech of their Advanced Driver Assistance Systems. We pick up the conversation with Mr. DeNiro's explanation of MPE.
Well, we call it the Navtech Map and Positioning Engine, and this is something that we created as a reference solution. So it's a reference solution that we're offering to the industry, and we've done quite a bit of work on the software that takes to make it run and what the hardware configuration needs to be. Basically, the Map and Positioning Engine, and this will answer one of your other questions, Joe, is it actually has GPS. It has dead reckoning in that it has a gyro on board and expect to pick up wheel sensor speed input off the CAN bus or some other way. But in that way, it does dead reckoning. It has vehicle positioning or map matching. It has, very importantly, the electronic horizon, which is, as you probably know, the software that looks ahead in the map and searches some distance ahead of the vehicle for attributes that are of interest, whether they be hazards or speed limit changes or just something like slope and curvature and so forth. And then it's implemented the ADASIS interface, which is ADAS interface specification, which is a new standard that's being developed in Europe by a European Commission managed by Ertico. And ADASIS version 2 is the latest version of that, and we've implemented that as the interface message out of the Map and Positioning Engine. And then it has the CAN interface for talking on the CAN bus, although it also has serial output and others if it, you know, is to be connected directly with some sensor or something like that. So the concept is that we wanted to create essentially an alternative to a navigation system for providing this kind of data for ADAS or fuel economy, active safety, and frankly, it could be a number of applications. I mean, you could envision by adding communications, you'd have a e-call solution, telematic solution. You would have a road user charging, tolling solution based on satellite data. Could be traffic probe data, insurance billing, you know, any number of applications. But the purpose was really to address the ADAS, active safety, and fuel economy markets. And to do this such that, I mean, obviously, Navtech likes having navigation systems in cars, but we expect that there are smaller, lower cost cars that may not have a line-fit, you know, OEM navigation solution. And when you're talking about things like maybe front light control, headlight control, or fuel economy, you know, think about fuel economy, for example. That's something that's not just the luxury car owner is going to be interested in. That's also going to be the very small cars. In fact, probably more so the small cars. And for a car company to say, well, we have this capability available, but you kind of have to order this navigation system in order to get it. Or the fact that if people don't order the navigation system, then it's not available, whereas if they do order the navigation system, it is available. That just gets very confusing. So we created this module concept which makes it very low cost and very small size. The prototype board that we've developed this on is smaller than the size of a credit card. And, you know, we don't know the exact pricing because this is going to be up to the semiconductor companies, but, you know, obviously a small fraction of what a navigation system would cost. And, you know, to just be very clear, Navtech is not getting in the hardware business with this. What we've done is we've partnered with semiconductor companies, and they have invested in the hardware architecture to our specification, and what Navtech has invested in is the software and the data, and this is a new database. It's not a navigation database. It's just a database for these ADAS applications, which means we don't have address ranges, we don't have turn restrictions, we don't have points of interest, and that sort of thing.
Well, yes, there's a lot of meat in what you just said, so let me see if I can understand it in various parts. One of which is the interface to the vehicle itself and what exactly the information that's conveyed in terms of the map data to the actual, the
application.
The machine interface.
Right.
It's obviously taking some of the Navtech POI data, looking ahead, as you said. And so, you know, what's that first application that it's going to look at? Is it going to look at, shifting, fuel injection, or what's the primary input that the vehicle can accept?
Well, it's any number of the applications. I mean, it could be safety applications like adaptive cruise control, lane departure warning, you know, adding curve speed control onto adaptive cruise control. You know, we've set the expectation with adaptive cruise control that your car will slow down with a slower moving vehicle in front of it, and now it could also potentially slow down for a sharp curve ahead, even though you sent the cruise control at a higher speed. It could aid the noisy vision sensors, video sensors that you have in a lane departure warning system. Or, as you indicated, and to answer one of your other questions, one of the most important applications we see is this whole fuel economy thing. It could be predictive cruise control. It could be a smart transmission. It could be this new eco routing or eco routing or eco driving, actually, I guess is the right term, where your car is giving you speed recommendation, maybe on your speedometer or something, that's in real time optimizing the way you drive so that it's reducing emissions and improving fuel economy. And this is becoming extremely interesting to the OEMs, you know, with the price of fuel today and all the concern about environment and emissions and so forth. And we've seen some very innovative technology coming along that way. So basically, it's designed to support all these without any preference for any. And basically, you know, kind of consider it a heartbeat in the car that's just pumping out the position and velocity of the car as well as information about things that are up ahead. So the electronic horizon is continually looking ahead. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a quarter of a mile, maybe it's 2 miles. I mean, whatever it is, it's looking ahead without a route being entered. Okay, this is just assuming where the car is going to go and looking all alternatives up front. And whatever applications are being used by this, this thing will be configured to search out those events in the future. So those events might be a changing speed limit, or it might be slope information or curvature information looking for sharp curves. So any of these things, and the electronic horizon is just finding this and at some rate putting this message out that, okay, there's a sharp curve in 200 meters, now 180 meters, now 170 meters, and so forth. So that's really the function of electronic horizon. And then on the other side, and this is on the CAN bus, and on the other side of the CAN bus is an application that's looking for this information and then using its algorithm to compute what it's doing, whether it's changing the headlight aiming or whether it's attempting to set up some braking or acceleration, you know, those sort of things.
Is there an API provided with this so that the OEM can develop the applications and, you know, reach down into the Navtech database to get whatever he's looking for in terms of the...
Well, sort of. The Adasys interface kind of handles that. So everyone's agreeing on what you're going to see out of a device like this, and that's why we've implemented the standard Adasys interface. Now, on the other side of the CAN bus, there's something called a reconstructor. And the reconstructor takes that standard message, both the content and the format of that data coming out of the Adasys message and, you know, the messages on the CAN bus, and reconstructs this. So if you're looking for, let's say, slope information, it looks again like slope once it comes out of that. So everything is pretty standard on the MPE. Where it may get a little custom is on that reconstructor thing, which is, on one hand, knowing what it's listening to in terms of the ADASIS message and the CAN bus messages, but on the opposite end, formatting this data in a means that the application algorithms are intending to see.
Who was the kind of the audience that was demanding this type of an application? Was it more the OEMs who saw an opportunity to provide the application, or was it the car manufacturers who were saying, "Look, we know what the technology can do now. So what have you got for us that can leverage all of the location-based data?"
Right. Well, when I say OEM, I mean car makers, as opposed to, maybe tier one system suppliers. But it was definitely the car makers who were the impetus for this. And again, it was, as we have been working in this whole ADAS area, we realized that we needed a solution that could get to vehicles without a nav system. And as I said, the conundrum was, somebody wants fuel economy in their car, and you say, well, you got to order this nav system. And, line fit, installed navigation systems are still pretty pricey. So, it'd be hard to tell someone that they need a $1,500 nav system in a, $12,000 car in order to get better fuel economy. And so we had to find a solution. And frankly, we don't expect this to be an option. Okay, we've designed this thing such that the decision by the car maker is to put this across standard fit across an entire model, if not the entire fleet. So we try to come up a solution which is the path to getting GPS and mapping in every vehicle. And as we started looking at tolling solutions and, like I said, fuel economy, front light aiming, some of these applications, which are becoming very popular here early on, we don't see those being options. We see those as being kind of standard across vehicles. Hybrid vehicles, for example, can benefit tremendously from that data. And you'd like to have, this could be a module embedded within the hybrid engine controller itself. It doesn't even have to be on a CAN bus or something like that.
So, Bob, what do you think are some of the gotchas in technology like this that seem to want to take over the vehicle for us, or at least support us in a way that we may not be familiar?
So as we continue to create more of these automated functions and sensors in the car and so forth, I think there's a danger that our car becomes foreign to us. And if the car is operating in a manner that we don't feel easy about, we're not going to feel good about switching the system on. What maps do is it gives these sensors a broader view, over the hill, around the curve, and so forth, and what's around the car, and therefore the car has the ability to feel more comfortable the way we would drive it, if we were controlling everything ourselves. And that driver acceptance is really important. I think back to my days in my early career when I was involved with the aviation community, and we were doing automatic landing of airplanes. And I'll guarantee you, there were some very nifty algorithms we came up with, but it didn't fly the airplane like the pilot flew it. And he would, he's risking his life. He's not going to turn on that system unless it feels just like he would do that landing. And we had to basically mimic a pilot for there to be acceptance. And I think that philosophy holds in the car. We've got to really mimic driver behavior, and the extra visibility that a map gives you, gets you there.
Yeah, no, I can certainly see that. Have you allowed for map updates? Is there anything that's going to provide for that?
Absolutely. Yeah, map updates are very important. And this map that's going in here, I'll stress, it's not a navigation map. So, it doesn't have turn restrictions and even address ranges to put a destination in and so forth. It's a very compact map. In fact, the entire continent, like the entire continent of Europe or entire North American continent, is less than 2 gigabytes, maybe even less than a gigabyte, and we're still analyzing that compared with what a navigation map would be. And the reason is because, first of all, we have fewer attributes, like I said, and then we're looking at compact ways to store it. But it also simplifies the map, therefore, and we don't have to do the searches that you have to do when you're doing navigation. So because of that simplified map, it enables map update in a very straightforward manner. And again, we're following some European conventions that have been developed there and allowing for that. I mean, we've got more work to do on that. But when it comes to these kinds of applications, you know, with your navigation system, yeah, you might want to go a year, 2 years. You know, some people might wait a while till they update their data. That's not going to be acceptable with these systems that are controlling car functions. And as we've talked to our customers, we're looking at probably mandatory annual updates, if not more often. And for that reason, we have taken that into account in this design and made it much, much more straightforward to update this data. Now, the whole process of how it eventually gets to the car, you know, whether it's something when you go in for your oil change, you get a data change too, and so forth. You know, the industry hasn't figured out all that. We've all got lots of ideas, but we really haven't settled on anything yet, and that's something that we're going to have to be working on over the next 12 months or so.
Yeah, I'm sure the driver is going to have some other types of behavior modifications, not just where to fill up on their next load of data.
Yeah, you know, one way to look at this, Joe, is this is a change to the electronics architecture of the car. And, you know, just from a personal standpoint, I can think back to my early days when I was in the Air Force and we were launching GPS satellites, you know. And I always thought back then that someday every car might have GPS in it, you know, and maps and that sort of thing. And this is kind of a neat point at this point in my career to maybe get closure on that. Because I think we've created a solution where we can see that the way to that happening.
Well, good. Again, thanks for your time, Bob. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Joe, and I hope all is going well.
Thanks again for joining us on another Directions Media podcast. If you have a comment about today or any of other of our podcasts, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and be sure to tell a friend.